Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand? LA living gridlocked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got bunnies and prints. And they just like stepped in and were like, all right, it's done. Like, here you go. And I mean, it's just kind of one of those things where you hear about and you go, okay, this is a decent organization. I'm going there tomorrow. And I remember, probably like a month ago, I tried to get together before the Thompson family was blowing up. And when you guys were doing Helmets for Helmets still, but like, you know, you hadn't been on The View, you know, all over to other countries promoting it or whatever. But here we are now a month later, and probably a lot's happened. So I kind of just wanted to see what's the last month been like for you at this point, like for you and your family. You got four kids, right?
Right. Well, we have four kids here, four young kids here. Brock, who's 8, Bryson, who's 6, Peyton, who's 5, and then Lennon, who's 3. You know, it's been a whirlwind. You know, we've been contacted by a lot of people looking to get involved with what Jack's Helping Hand and really what Helmets for Helmets is trying to do to benefit with Jack's Helping Hand. So, you know, between the travel to the East Coast and, you know, over to Toronto, you know, it's been a whirlwind, but it's been a lot of excitement, and probably the biggest thing that we're looking at this is just the opportunity to share other people's stories that are very similar to ours. You know, we're hearing from people all over the country that are battling with epilepsy, or their family member has epilepsy, or someone that they know close passed away from epilepsy, and being able to connect with them and get them to talk about their stories and hopefully what the boys have started. And we hope to continue to through Jack's Helping Hand and, you know, through Helmets for Helmets, to be able to build into something that can, you know, reach not only families locally here in San Luis Obispo, but throughout the country.
So if people have been under a rock on social media in San Luis Obispo, they might not know your story. So can you tell me kind of your family story from the beginning of how you guys have kind of gone on this journey?
Well, let's see, about 2 years ago, it'll be 3 years the day after Thanksgiving, our son Bryson had his first really big seizure. He had other ones, but we didn't know what they were. We thought that he was just falling down. And, you know, being a dad, I said, you know, his feet are just too big. His body's got to grow into him. And day after Thanksgiving, he fell, and, you know, we kind of looked at it and was like, okay, wait, that was different. So we take him to the doctor, and they're like, well, you know, let's see what happens. And so probably about a week and a half or so later, I'm traveling with work down in the in Southern California. Right. And my wife gives me a call, you know, while I'm at a high school with some other guys I work with. And she's just, you know, she really can't talk. She's just telling me that Bryson had a seizure. And this is probably, she probably sent me 10 to 15 text messages before, but I'm working, so I didn't see him. And, you know, she proceeds to tell me that, you know, he had a seizure probably about 15 minutes long, and that she was in an ambulance on the way to the hospital. And, you know, my body, you know, just kind of went numb. I didn't know how to react, didn't know how to deal with it, you know. And I told Coach Walsh and the other coach was there with that, hey, I needed to go. I couldn't stay. And Coach Walsh is a great family guy, and, you know, believes in that your family comes first. And, you know, he's like, get out of here, you know, go. And so I drove back up, contacting friends, family, my mom, my sister, just asking them to pray, you know, for Bryson, because, you know, I didn't know what was going on. My wife didn't know what was going on. And, you know, I thought that, you know, he was, you know, dead. I didn't know what to expect. You know, I didn't know what I was walking into. And so just overcome with emotion.
And your family's up in Oregon, right?
All up in Oregon.
And your wife and kids are here, and you're in LA.
Yeah. And it was, I can't even find the right word to describe the feelings that we had. And so I made it back up here, up to San Luis, went directly to the hospital. We stayed there for a few hours, and from that time, you know, they got him out of the seizure. And since that time, we've been going to various neurologists, anywhere from San Diego to Stanford to Children's Hospital of LA, you know, just looking to anybody to get some peace of mind, some clarity about what's causing his seizures, what's going to stop them, trying multiple medications that at times only seem to make them worse. At one point in time, he was on a medication that didn't help his seizures, and he actually went and had about 100 of them in about a 3-hour period, you know. And so that was really tough. And that from that point right there, we ended up having to take an ambulance down to Children's Hospital of LA, spent some time down there. I think 3 different occasions we've been in the hospital for at least a week, either doing video EEGs, any monitoring, testing that they need to do to try to get some resolution. And it's been a crazy whirlwind, yeah. You know, between, like I said, the medication and now his modified diet. And, you know, obviously he had a surgery just over a year ago, actually almost just over a year to date. He had a surgery to have a basically a pacemaker for your brain put into his body. Yeah. So that's been something that's been a big help, right, for him. You know, and I think that it's something that we're just thrilled to have had that. At least we know that can slow the seizure down or stop one.
Right. And we have some mutual friends, somebody who was actually in his class last year, and I was over at their house for dinner, and they were like, they were making some cards as the class. They were talking about it, and yeah, we're making this cards for this kid in my class. And I'm like, who's that? I was like, oh, I think I know that kid. Like, that's Aristotle. Like, oh man, I wonder what's going on. And that's kind of the first time I became kind of aware of it. And then you kind of notice that, you know, he's got this sweet Saints helmet that he's wearing around too. That, you know, I always just thought, hey, it's game day. Yeah. You know, when I didn't know anything about it, I thought, hey man, this is a kid who wants to wear a football helmet on game day.
Yeah.
This is what's happening, because that's all the only time that I saw him.
Right.
But then, you know, you see, okay, you know, you get more information. I can't imagine how. I have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, and my 2-year-old at about 1.5 had like some kind of an episode at school. He was mad that grandma was dropping him off. He was mad that grandma was leaving.
Yeah.
Had like, you know, eyes rolled back, whatever. We thought it was a seizure. The doctor said maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But right, the lack of clarity that anybody has about something like that, if they can't actually see it happening in front of them,
yeah,
is just straight up maddening to me as a dad. You're like, okay, here are all the things that happened. Their eyes rolled, you know, and it's, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it's legitimate that they can't know exactly what happened, but it's so frustrating. I just can't even. And I had one little thing happen. I can't imagine what it must be like when it's happening day after day or week after week for an extended period of time, and you're still trying to get answers.
Yeah, it really puts you on guard at all times, because you just don't know. You don't know when they're going to happen. You don't know how long they're going to happen. You don't know how to prepare for it, with the exception of keeping him in your arms, holding his hand all the time, or putting him in a stroller. I mean, here he is, a 6-year-old, getting pushed around in a stroller, you know, and he's totally capable of walking, but he can't predict when he's going to have a seizure. His helmet is obviously there to protect his head from major falls, but there's other parts that are getting dinged up. I mean, you know, he looks, his lower body looks like he is probably about 12 years old or 13 years old from all the cuts and scratches and scrapes on his body from having fallen down. And, you know, you go to so many doctors and you're just looking for some piece of information, and each one of our bodies operate totally different. And it's the same when it comes to seizures. Everyone is totally different. They have a certain spectrum that they kind of work through as far as treatment, medication for it, but no one is the same. No, everybody reacts differently to every different thing, and that's one of the reasons we've had to go through,
right,
gosh, I want to say six to eight different medications that he's been on. I'm probably doing it a little short. There's probably 6 or 8 that I can recall off the top of my head.
Right. So at some point, did he not have a helmet, or did the helmet did he have a helmet and it broke, or like what? How did you guys get involved with Jack's Helping Hand? I know you told the story on The View, but I'm interested in the kind of maybe the long version of it.
Yeah, so you know, early on he did not have a helmet. You know, okay. We weren't certain what was going on with it. You know, he didn't have a helmet, and there was one day that I was with him. My wife was gone. I was with him, and I took him to the bathroom. And you know, this is again at the time. This is a 4-year-old kid. He's completely potty trained. All that stuff. He's a functioning kid. And we started just standing behind him in the bathroom every single time. Mm-hmm. Every time he'd go to the bathroom, we'd stand. And he turns
hard floor in there.
Hard floor. He turns to step to the side. I'm like, hey, let me flush the toilet. I flushed the toilet, and he literally had a seizure, fell, hit the little stool that we had there to step up to wash his hands, and just has a nasty, big, swollen black eye. And he was, you know, inches away from just hitting his eye, maybe losing his eye. I mean, his complete body just dropped, and it just crushed my world. I didn't know, what to do at the point. I felt like I had completely let him down.
Because you're right there, and you're thinking, I'm just going to go do this thing real quick.
And, yes. And literally, Owen, I am about the distance of you and I apart with my body turned probably, a 90-degree angle from him, and he drops. And from that point on, we talked to the neurologist, and they were like, yeah, you guys should definitely get a protective headwear for him. And so we contacted, our insurance provider, which has been great throughout other things. The medical costs and things that that are associated with it are astronomical. But we gave them the information from the doctor, said this is a necessity, and our insurance provider said it's not a necessity. And so that was a big hit to us because we knew that he needed it. I mean, just this one time he had fallen, this could have happened at school, could have happened walking across the street, who knows when it could have happened. And so a friend of ours here in town, the head coach of Slow High, Pat Johnston, he let us know about this organization, Jack's Helping Hand, and said, you guys should look into it. And before we could even place a phone call, the next day Jack's Helping Hand was already reaching out to us and said, how can we get involved? How can we help you guys? And they bought the helmet, and we had talked to our in-laws. My father-in-law played 16 years in the NFL, and he immediately called the team that drafted him, the New Orleans Saints, called the equipment manager down there and said, hey, I got a grandson, he's got to wear this protective headwear. He kind of goes through the whole gamut with them about what's going on. And I think 2 days later, I think the day we got the helmet, or the day after we got the helmet, we had these, Saints logos and decals to dress the helmet up. And my kids are already huge Saints fans. I mean, my wife has the Saints games on.
So was your wife's father?
My wife's father. My wife's father, Stan Brock. He played 16 years in the NFL, 13 with the New Orleans Saints, and then 3 with the Chargers. He actually went to the Super Bowl. Last time Chargers went to the Super Bowl, he was a captain on the team.
Stan Humphrey's team.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. Mr. Stan, as she calls him. But so he called them up. They got it all decked out, and he's a huge football kid already, and so it made it a lot cooler for him. He didn't want to wear the helmet. He knew that he needed it, but it was a battle getting him to wear the helmet. And now you got all this stuff on there. It's like, okay, hey, this is kind of cool. This is, I'm a football player. I'm an NFL football player with all this stuff on. Got the American flag deal on there, the whole deal. So it looked, like a small version of New Orleans Saints helmet.
He's geared up now, right? I mean, that's what it's more like, right?
Rather exactly, than exactly. Yeah, he's wrapped and ready.
Wow, that's crazy. And so Jack's Helping Hand, obviously, I mean, it's a thing that I told somebody from the food bank the other day. That's the only ad I ever put on my site is for the food bank, because I think that's a great cause. But Jack's Helping Hand is another one that I would do, and I probably should. What's been your experience with those people there? Obviously, they have a few irons in the fire with a park that they are raising money for over time. They got the golf tournament that they do and other things that are in the community. What's your experience with the people there been like?
All that Jack's Helping Hand is doing for families here in the San Luis Obispo community is awesome. We look at them as family. I mean, you would think that we were the only people they're working with. That's how personal they are. Anytime, we have something going on, they're calling, hey, how can we help you with your travel? How can we help you with hotel? What can we do for you? And this is not us calling them and asking them. This is them saying, hey, when are your next doctor's appointments? Give us a schedule. We'll get everything set up for you. You know, and so for them just to constantly be reaching out to us, Karen over there, I mean, she is a member of our family. Yeah. Karen Borges, yeah. She is awesome. I mean, she literally has become part of our family. She's coming over, dropping stuff off the house. The kids go over to Jack's Helping Hand just to say hello, and next you know, Karen is giving them toys. I mean, they are just, they're a godsend. You know, they really are. I mean, they do so much for us, and just to be able to foster this relationship through their work, not by us wanting or asking them, right. They are extending themselves to us, and that's you know the big thing that we have taken notice to is that it's them extending, it's them wanting to be there for us,
not requiring you to go out of your way with all the stuff that you still have going on,
not asking anything of us, you know, not asking one iota of paperwork or anything of that nature. They're just doing, you know, they're doing God's work. They really are.
So then how did Helmets for Helmets get started? So, you know, you get help from Jack's Helping Hand with different things that you're doing. Helmets for Helmets is one of your son's ideas, right?
Yeah. So my son, Brock.
Your oldest?
My oldest, my eight-year-old. He's only eight. Yeah, he looks like he's 12, but he's only 8 years old. You know, we wanted to donate something to Jack's Helping Hands auction. So he asked my wife, hey, can we, you know, get in touch with some of the Saints people again? You know, my wife runs her father's foundation, okay. Which a lot of former Saints alumni come to their events.
Okay.
So they contact Zach Streif and John Stichcomb and say, hey, you know, could you help us out with getting a helmet? And they're like, sure, awesome. And then my son Brock's like, well, Dad, you know a few people. Can we call them and see if they can donate helmets? I said, no, but I'll give you my phone, and you can call them. So he calls a close relative of mine who's a coach up at University of Washington, Keith Bonifa, calls him and asks him, can he help out? And he's like, not a problem. And so from there, they put an Instagram video together, and you're like, hey, let's call it Helmets for Helmets. So they put a video together, kind of say what they're trying to do. And from there, we quickly had responses from the Carolina Panthers, Shaq Thompson, who played at University of Washington,
right.
Him and John Ross and Sidney Jones were some of the first people to get involved. And then Derek Carr, who is a close family friend of a guy who used to work here at Cal Poly with us, he wanted to get involved as well. So we actually got the first helmet. We had the first commitment from the Saints, but the Raiders and Derek Carr were the first to actually get a helmet to us. We did play against Derek Carr.
Against Moraga game.
Yeah, I don't like talking about that game too much.
Yeah, I was there. I bought a camera that day at a photo shop in Fresno, and then went over to the game. Yeah, that was the day I remember. But yeah,
because
I was like, oh man, Derek Carr might be taking a picture of an NFL quarterback here.
Oh yeah, he was a good one.
Yeah, so he contributed from the Raiders.
He contributed from the Raiders, and right. That was awesome. And next thing you know, we get a helmet from the Carolina Panthers. Shaq Thompson and Luke Kuechly actually sent a helmet. I mean, Luke Kuechly's an awesome guy. You know, just what he's doing down there in that community and also back up in the BC area. We went to Boston College.
Okay.
So what they're doing there, and Sidney Jones was fresh off of a Super Bowl.
Right.
He sends a helmet from the Philadelphia Eagles as well. And from there, with the support of Jack's Helping Hand, the word has kind of grown, you know, throughout the country. You know, it started just here locally and reaching out through a couple of family members or friends, and you know, next thing you know, we're getting a call to go to New York to be on The View, you know.
So before we get to The View, is Helmets for Helmets trying to be supporting Jack's Helping Hand locally or trying to support other kids who are in your similar situation at this point? I know originally it was like, hey, let's give back to Jack's Helping Hand,
right.
But is it also like, hey, let's connect with some other kids who might also like need helmets? Or is it, you know, you said you've talked to other families around the country who are in similar or, you know, similar situations.
Right. So the initial charge with Helmets for Helmets is going to be to support Jack's Helping Hands auction, which will be coming up here in the local area on July 7th. That's
okay.
That's our initial charge, and we're going to put all of our efforts right now, all of the items that we're receiving in, those are all going to go to benefit Jack's Helping Hand. From there, we are hoping to grow it to its own small foundation, which will continue to support Jack's Helping Hand, but also look to support other families throughout this community and throughout the country as they are in need, not even as we see fit, but as we see that they are in need, that we can help help kids that, you know, in similar situations, that
kind of get the same kind of help that you
same
guys
same kind of help that you know that they can, you know, that there's always going to be need for the travel expenses. You don't think of things like that. Well, you know, you look at our situation alone with four little kids at home, that when one has to go to, you know, the hospital for a week, you know, the others, there has to be some balance there. So between my wife and I tagging off back and forth from Los Angeles, San Diego, right, to SLO, and having our, you know, my in-laws or other people in our family fly down here and balance that, you know, there's a lot of unmet need in there, right, you know. And so that is our aim, is to kind of fill that gap and then also be able to provide equipment for these kids to do the things they want to do. It could be a helmet, it could be, you know, a wheelchair, it could be a walker, who knows. We're not going to put boundaries,
right,
on what we're doing. We just, cool, want to be able to help other kids live their lives the way they want to.
What's one thing about, you know, your experience or Jack's Helping Hand, or, you know, what your family has gone through, that you think people really need to know?
You know, probably the biggest thing I think that we want to get out, and that I would love for people to know, is that just because your kids or someone in your family has something that comes up unexpected, a illness, it could be a death or whatever it may be, you continue to live your life and honor them and provide opportunities for those around you. You know, Bryson has a huge smile, a great laugh. You know, the smile he gets from my wife, the laugh is just came on his own. He's just got a big giggly laugh. You know, he gets to do what he wants to do. If he wants to play basketball, he's going to play basketball. If he wants to play baseball, he wants to draw pictures, you know, ride a bicycle, whatever it may be, you know, we're not going to allow his condition, him having epilepsy, stop him from doing the things he wants to do and limit what our family is capable of doing. Now, do we slow down certain aspects of it? Of course we do, but we're not going to allow something to stop us. And that's probably the biggest thing, is that continue to push each other, continue to strive, continue to live your life and push to be the best version of yourself, and in turn make sure you know that you're part of something bigger. You're part of something bigger than yourself, and whenever possible, look to help people, look to reach out to people. You know, a smile can go so far, a hug, a handshake, whatever it may be, but brighten other people's days and you will be fulfilled at the end of the day.
Yeah, you know, I was really impressed with your 8-year-old, with Brock's, you know, the way he spoke on national TV, you know, being able to get out there and tell his story, and it sounds like there's been some leadership there from him as well in this whole thing. You know, I can't imagine having a younger sibling who's going through something like that at that age, and being able to kind of step up and be, I guess, be a leader or find a way to make it, you know, into a positive for other people.
Yeah, no question. Brock is an awesome kid, and, you know, leaders, I believe, are born. You know, you have certain traits and certain qualities in you, and that was something that it just came about. I mean, he's been asked to do things at his school and, you know, get up in front of the entire school and read stuff. They had a dedication of a new facility kind of being built in the front of C.L. Smith Elementary School, and he was one of two kids to ask to speak there. The other was a fifth grader, and he's a first grader,
right,
you know, and so he has kind of had that leader DNA in him, you know, and I think that he has the voice to do so, kind of living with two coaches. I'm not sure if you know this now, but my wife used to be a cheerleading coach,
okay,
as well. So she is she's a general in herself. So
well, if you got four kids, you got to be two, man. I. Two is like, it seems like, you know, it seems like enough, and I can't imagine having four running around.
Yeah.
I can't even process.
it can be wild, but, yeah, you know, Brock, you know, he kind of has it. So he was just, it was awesome seeing him just stay composed through all those various times that he had to speak, and then getting him on TV. It was like, wow. It was like, okay, good for you, young man.
Cool.
Good for you.
I love this story, and I know a lot of other people do too. I mean, that's why you got to meeting Kobe Bryant was pretty rad for them, getting like a ton of other stuff. I mean, are you guys auctioning these helmets online? Are they all at this Jack's Helping Hand auction? Like, if people want to like look at them and donate, like, what's the best way to think about it?
The best way for people to get involved is go to helmetsforhelmets.com. There you'll see a link to our online auction. Various items. Not every item is going to be on the online auction. And then you'll see other items will be listed for the live auction at Jack's Helping Hand. So not everything's available right now. There's certain things that are going to be put up that people can bid on them now.
Right.
I'm not certain on when exactly it's going to the online auction is going to close or what is all
it's
up.
Okay. Yeah.
But you know there's going to be a ton of things out there. There's going to be some surprise items that'll be at the live auction. You know, some pretty, if you're a football fan and you're in this area, you want to come. If you're not in this area, you're going to want to come. There's some pretty iconic people that have got involved or that other people have had their memorabilia and pushed it towards this cause. So I would encourage people to go to helmetsforhelmets.com and take a look at it.
And that's the number four, right? Helmets
four. Helmetsforhelmets4.com.
Do you mind talking about football for a minute?
Not at all.
So, you know, important stuff out of the way, helmetsforhelmets.com. Spring ball is done. School's almost out for the summer. Maybe this is the time where you guys start to kind of ratchet up in terms of prep and other things. I don't know what the summertime of an assistant football coach at Cal Poly looks like. What's your summer like shaping up to look like aside from, you know, growing Helmets for Helmets, which it seems like it's kind of exponential right now.
Right.
You know, how do you kind of balance that and keep your hands around things? And what does a normal, you know, off season look like for you?
Well, you know, the off season really is Christmas. There isn't much off season to it. You know, right now the guys are in there lifting and conditioning. You know, they're all doing that stuff with Coach Holder, our strength conditioning coach. We'll do our last team activity before summer break tomorrow as we go into dead week for finals. But the next month is going to be, you know, full of football related travel for me. I'm going to be going to camps throughout the West Coast, really working with other staffs and trying to evaluate other prospects and teach high school kids, you know, better ways to play the game, you know, give them more techniques and, you know, kind of build on some of the things that their high school coaches have done. So, you know, that'll be pretty much throughout the month of June for our entire staff. We'll be going out doing camps, and then we'll hold our on-campus camps at the end of the month, June 29th and 30th, right here in San Luis Obispo. And, you know, really from there, the guys will take about a week off after graduation, and then they'll get right back going with Coach Holder. You know, all voluntary workouts. Us coaches, we won't do anything with them as far as on the field work, but we will we will have office hours to where they can come in and sit down and talk through the game. We can go over our installation, you know, our early game plans, early thoughts, watch our upcoming opponents with them,
and that watch some film and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, okay. we can watch film, and you know, we've got a good dose of film on our first few opponents, so we'll watch all that stuff, and we'll talk through, you know, different things that we're seeing and different things that we see that from our team that we need to get better at. You know, it's a constant that you have to continue to work on yourself before you can go work on those other people.
So one win last year, obviously there are some things that you guys need to get better at. You know, that's kind of a given the record on, right? So what are one or two of those things that you guys kind of have identified that that your team really needs to do better, and how do you feel about those things coming off of spring?
Well, one of the things that, you know, we really couldn't control within last year, but it's something that you can work on off season, is health. You know, we've got to stay healthy. It was really detrimental to our offense last year, losing Joe Prothero, All-American running back. You know, I mean, he's just a great player, great man. Losing our starting quarterback, Khalil Jenkins, as well, playing a redshirt freshman, you know, the remainder of the season. So being able to stay healthy, and that's a big part of what's going on.
We know we're next to Spanos because the train's going by.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Get that.
So get healthy.
Get healthy. And then really, you know, it's about getting back to playing with the mental edge that has been synonymous with Cal Poly football. You know, really looking at us being able to play a much more physical style of football. You know, and really that starts with the mindset. You know, if you come in with the mental aspect of how you're going to play the game, you know, your body will follow. You know, and so we continue to work little things within here. We do different exercises or activities to try to work on the mental aspect of what we're going through. You know, we tell these guys that, you know, you got to put yourself in tough positions in order to respond. And if you can deal with that adversity, deal with those tough situations now, your response will be adequate in the game. You know, so we're working on those things. We have gotten some pretty good depth within the guys as far as the time they spent in spring ball. Kyle Reed, who will be a redshirt freshman this upcoming season, has really grown into a good leader for us, and he'll be a solid number two behind Khalil Jenkins. You know, and he's really taken charge of what's going on, being a good echo of what Khalil, what Joe, what Harry Whitson, those other caps are saying.
It's nice to have a somebody pushing somebody else too, right? And kind of, yeah, challenging.
Yeah, no question. You know, competition brings out the best of us, you know, and we all know and understand that Khalil is going to be our starting quarterback. But when you see a guy like Kyle Reed out there taking a couple runs, 60, 70 yards, you know, against the defense to the house, I mean, that's just pretty exciting. You know, you're like, okay, hey, the program is going to be in good hands. And, you know, if, you know, knock on wood here, that, you know, we have another injury, we think we've got a capable guy behind him. You know, and then really just the guy's growing up, getting back to the basics, getting back to the details. I think that was a big thing for us this spring, and continuing, and the guys doing their own workouts now, is working on the little fundamentals that'll get you there. You go back and you look at the tape from the 2017 season, there were so many games that were decided by 10 or less points. And you talk about the game being a game of inches. It's the steps, it's the angles, it's the hat placement, it's eye location on the football, it's seeing the ball to the tuck and not turning your head trying to make a run before you have the ball in your hand. So getting the guys to train their eyes, train their bodies, train their minds on those things now, those are really the things that we're trying to hone in on right now to give us that edge of the things that we may have missed in the 2017 season.
And as somebody watching the game translating, you know, I'm picturing that means, you correct me if I'm wrong, I'm picturing that means, you know, fumbles make a big difference. You know, even if you recover them, it's second and 12 instead of second and 8 or second and 7 or whatever, right? It's exactly. It's making an angle and settling for 4 yards versus trying to get around the edge and ended up with a 2 yard loss. Those are the kinds of things that I'm, when you say like eye placement and stuff, that's what I'm picturing.
You hit it on the head. I mean, you look at, you know, various games, there were drop passes that would have resulted in touchdowns or would have resulted in a first down, and maybe another first down keeps the other team from getting the ball again. You know, so those little aspects of the game are things that may seem mundane to the average fan, the average spectator of the sport, but when you're in it, you understand that they make a big difference. Any football coach would tell you that if you think about the big picture all the time, you're going to miss the small steps, and you have to focus on those small, finite details to get you there. My college coach, Dirk Cutter, who's the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he always used to talk to us about details, being detail-oriented, and that's what we're pushing, that's what we're stressing here this offseason and moving forward into the summers.
Do you guys feel like added pressure coming off a 1-10 season, like as a coaching staff or your players?
No, I don't feel there's added pressure to us. I think there's a sense of urgency to get back to showing the Mustang faithful what Cal Poly football is about, and that the 2017 season was an anomaly, it's not the standard. You know, so I don't feel that there's a sense of pressure to it. I think that you create enough pressure on yourself to get players to respond the way you want to become a better teacher, to get them to understand the key points of what you're talking about. I don't think you need added pressure of saying, oh, we have to win this game. Again, you look at the big, you're going to miss the small. And if you don't take care of the small things, you'll never have those final outcomes that you're looking for.
So helmetsforhelmets.com is the place to go this summer and leading up to July. And I'm sure there's some kind of a – is it a – Jack's Helping Hand, I picture it's a live auction. It's probably like a dinner or something that they do, a fundraiser. You can probably check that out. You can Google Jack's Helping Hand. I can attest they do really good work, you know, whether it's with a camp for kids and families with cancer, whether it's helping a family like the Thompsons, definitely something that's a worthwhile – local organization, and that money is generally to help local folks here in San Luis Obispo area. And for people like you, there are, I mean, you talked about it already, but you know, there's complications getting to a place like LA. If you live in Ventura or somewhere, you know, it's a day trip or something for some people, but for us, you know, we don't have those kinds of medical facilities around here. That's a really difficult thing for people in our community sometimes. So definitely a worthwhile thing. Any last thoughts?
Well, just thank you all for, you know, for tuning in. Thank you, Owen, for having me, getting a chance to sit down with you. And you know, I just hope that everybody out there, you get a chance to take a look into Helmets for Helmets and Jack's Helping Hand, and really, you know, look to give back in your own communities as well. You know, that's what it's about. It's about giving back when you have an opportunity to help. You know, I believe it is each and every person's calling, whether you know it or not, to be able to give assistance, to help, to lend a hand to other people in need. And I think that if we do that, I think the world will end up being a better place.
Can't argue with that. Thanks, Arsal.
Appreciate you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright they blind my vision. The people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up, don't bring me down. You give your love to everyone around. You send me on my way to Trouble Town. Love can't find my way around Trouble Town. Front page of